Welcome to Ankh Live On Air. I'm your host today, Ashling Wehner. In today's episode, supported by Azurity Pharmaceuticals, we spoke with Michael J. Morrow, MD, about treatment adherence with nilotinib in patients with Philadelphia chromosome positive chronic myeloid leukemia. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Morrow discussed barriers to nilotinib treatment adherence in patients with Ph-positive CML, ways that non-adherence can diminish quality of life and clinical response to treatment, ways that the new formulation of nilotinib addresses adherence issues by reducing the need for fasting, and ongoing research into alternative formulations of other agents that may further improve CML treatment efficacy and tolerability. Dr. Morrow, thank you so much for taking the time today to speak about nilotinib treatment adherence in patients with Ph-positive CML. So just to start off, what are some of the most common administration challenges or reasons for treatment non-adherence with the first approved formulation of nilotinib, which was Tasigna?
So nilotinib is obviously an advance in the treatment of CML, but specific to the details of administration, this is a drug that requires a fasting state to be administered, and it's twice daily. Now, those wouldn't seem to be major barriers for patients to adherence and steady adherence, which has been shown in multiple studies in CML to really be one of the most important elements for successful treatment, that being near perfect or perfect adherence to treatment. They are indeed challenges. The concerns about fasting and non-fasting state is needs to be explained to patients, and that taking a compound like this with certain foods can significantly increase the exposure, which may increase adverse effect. Now, you have to be careful when you explain to patients. They may see that as an advantage. If I take this with food, I'm going to get more medicine into my system, and that's clearly not what we want. There's a therapeutic window in which we're trying to aim for. Nilotinib also had some other elements in its label, particularly earlier on, regarding cardiovascular precautions. There's a QT prolonging effect, which certainly could have some relation to drug exposure and pharmacokinetics. And it also has other warnings and issues in the label regarding exacerbation of metabolic disease, such as worsening of blood glucose control, and unfortunately, an association with vascular occlusive disease. So clearly, we want to stay on a narrow band with nilotinib, or Tasigna rather, the original formulation, to avoid simply exposure that we don't want, to potentially limit the potential for adverse effects, which could range. And moreover, we are concerned about the overall toxicity profile of nilotinib, or Tasigna rather, and how some of these issues could potentially, by extension, lead to more adverse effects for the patients rather than benefit.
Is there anything else that you wanted to say about how non-adherence to Tasigna, typically affects areas of treatment like clinical outcomes, quality of life, or healthcare costs?
Sure. So non-adherence, again, is a pretty specific variable in treatment response to CML and good outcomes. So you have a unique paradigm. We have oral targeted therapy delivered for a number of years. That's actually a new paradigm where we don't see that in other cancers. Patients may not expect to be advised that they're taking oral treatment for several years. And actually, functionally, many patients take therapy indefinitely. So it's a really long journey. Using an analogy, it's like running a marathon, and you have to keep at it and keep all the tools you need to run smoothly along the way. So it could clearly, and we know it can diminish clinical response. And for example, a nice study from the Hammersmith group in the UK during the Amanibir showed that less than ideal adherence, even lower than 90%, is associated with less likelihood of achieving milestone responses, such as molecular response or deep molecular remission, the kind of things that could actually avail a patient to be able to think about not being on treatment indefinitely. Quality of life, maybe the reason why patients are becoming non-adherent, they're trying to minimize side effects or avoid side effects. So we're missing the ball there because the physician-patient relationship's lacking. We need to counsel them about adverse effects, hear about them, manage them, so they're not modifying or manipulating their dosing in order to, in their own minds, help with their quality of life. That's our job. And then healthcare costs, of course, if we had less response, more need for therapy, longer duration of therapy, and even potentially more adverse events, all of those are disadvantageous for healthcare costs.
How common is non-adherence with Tasigna?
I think it varies And that adherence to therapy would vary, you know, depending on the setting. We know that if we just look, irrespective of the provider, but at different demographics, we know that certain demographics pose more of a challenge. Younger patients, especially pediatric age range, men are worse than women. And my approach to non-adherence is to assume it may be present and then to quantify it. So when I see patients in the clinic, I don't say, you don't have any issues with non-adherence, you're taking all your medicine, right? I say something along the lines of, tell me how you're taking your medication and how many doses are you missing per week, per month, to validate the potential for the existence of non-adherence, to properly quantify it, and then to really tackle it or unpack it, because it may be a major issue, but it is not infrequent. For example, one of the most common reasons why a patient may be losing response, particularly deep molecular response, in many experts' minds and in many research platforms we've looked at, has been non-adherence rather than actual treatment resistance.
What are some of the benefits of the new formulation of nilotinib, dancetin, which was FDA approved in November 2024?
So a nice addition has come along with dancetin, which is essentially delivering nilotinib, which is the compound we wish, not via the original formulation, but by a different chemical structure. And therefore, we now have a form of this drug which can be orally delivered, but not have the issue with erratic or altered bioavailability or absorption and metabolism that we see with the non-fasting and fasting state. Because of the change in the chemical, the salt, if you will, the way the nilotinib parent compound is delivered to the patient, we have something that is unaffected by the initial steps of dosing, which would be, you know, obviously a patient doses and gastric and absorption and metabolism. So this is, you know, a major plus, and this is the use of this compound, which we know, you know, really was one of the medications which improved outcomes regarding deeper molecular remissions, perhaps increasing rates of treatment, availing patients of treatment-free remission beyond imatinib. I'm talking about nilotinib in general. So an alternate formulation of nilotinib may allow us to use this second-generation TKI better or more broadly and avoid this issue about adherence and fasting, which has plagued, really, in addition to the adverse event profile. This medication, nilotinib, since its original FDA approval, is the Cigna.
Do you have any other advice for colleagues regarding choosing a nilotinib formulation and counseling patients about the importance of treatment adherence?
A couple of key points for colleagues would be that, first off, awareness is key. If you're thinking about using this, you have to explain why and be familiar. The patient needs to know that the milligram strength changes. And although it's not relevant to the efficacy and the, you know, the goal of treatment, patients and all of us really, may, you know, quite simplistically, might wonder if I'm taking more milligrams or less milligrams, that might have more or less side effects, more or less benefit for my disease. And you know, by increasing the efficiency and eliminating the issues about absorption and fasting, you know, we see lower milligram dosing strength. And that just, I want to advise people to quickly dismiss that in our own minds, and for patients to say that we're talking about bioequivalence, that when you take, you know, a lower numerical dose strength of dancetin, you're going to be receiving the equivalent milligram dosing strength of the prior drug to Cigna, and gaining all the efficacy you're going to expect. The other advice, you know, for practitioners and providers is to recognize that this is the first step along the way for this novel compound. You know, we do have some questions about if we have better adherence, better absorption, and better precision of dosing, will we see a difference in adverse effects? I think we have important questions that still remain with this compound, nilotinib, whether it's Tasigna or nilotinib as dancetin, regarding what some of the risk-reward ratio is. And I think more studies are needed and more time is needed, but at least we can start by offering our patients an option which doesn't require fasting. And it's probably just in that simple fact alone is going to lead to better outcomes.
Overall, are there any advances in pH-positive CML treatment that are on the horizon, or any research that you'd like to see going forward based on remaining unmet needs for this patient population?
So this work in the area of developing alternative formulations of available drugs, this is not the only story. I think we should stay tuned, because I think we'll see alternate formulations of dasatinib, with the challenge there being overcoming the caution required if you co-administer dasatinib with acid-suppressing drugs, such as proton pump inhibitors or H2 blockers. So that's another story that should break. We've seen different formulations of imatinib for pediatric patients, which is very nice. But in the therapeutic realm, the work still continues. And, you know, we've had a huge development with asciminib being approved both in later line and now frontline therapy. And we're, you know, active movement for this drug into frontline therapy and how to best use it there. And there's still room for more. We still have very nice repertoire of second generation allosteric inhibitors. So these would be drugs that are like asciminib, but are now in development and could be alternatives, seeing if they can offer advantages with this novel type of BCR-ABL inhibitor. Allosteric inhibitors or STAMP inhibitors, specifically targeting the myristoyl pocket. Those include TERN-701 and a compound from a company called TGRX, which are in early clinical development. I think these hold promise. And lastly, there's still additional drugs which have been previously developed, never have been finalized in the U.S. system, but some have been finalized, for example, in China, such as olverembatinib. But in the U.S. and in Europe, we have yet newer compounds, such as Enliven-001, which is another ATP-competitive specific and potent inhibitor, which may offer a lower adverse event profile and better options for patients with resistance or intolerance. That being said, those drugs might find their way into earlier use quickly as well. So the work continues. We have a really good palette of medications in CML now, but with these alternate formulations, novel agents in development, I think we're going to be able to do even better and increase the cure fraction in CML in the years to come.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air, supported by Azurity Pharmaceuticals. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On X and Blue Sky, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.